Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
In tonight's episode, we're discussing the dead.
Specifically, ancestors. In witchcraft, we'll be brandishing blades, scooping guts, and slicing through flesh as we carve our jack-o'-lanterns.
Then, in Spelled Out, we'll be digging up graves and speaking to the dearly departed as we talk about ancestral offerings.
Hello.
Hello, witches. I can't say that because that's totally what Firelight and Velma say on their show.
So. Oh, yeah, it is.
So, I can't say that. But hello, audience. Generic, unnamed audience members. We don't have clever names for our listeners.
No, we don't.
I have to say, I don't know what to call. I call you our devoted, loyal, and wonderful fans.
Okay, so, yay, it's October.
It is October.
I'm excited.
It's the season of the witch. Yay! I'm really excited. This is, like, probably the most excited I've been about October in a long time, and I always get excited about October.
Me too.
But it's perfect. The weather has changed. We've got all sorts of creepy, crawly, ghouly, ghosty bits floating around in the air. Ah, it's great. And I just got back from meeting a bunch of witches.
That's right. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. Just got back. I'm sure anybody who's listening to this probably has heard from the other podcasters, but we had a big first ever pagan podcaster supermoot up in the Chicagoland area. Got to meet Velma from Witch's Brouhaha, Firelight from Inciting a Riot, Jillian from Iron Powaka, Brittany from Urban Green Witch, Scarlet from Lake's Front Pagan Voice, and Isaac and Jasmine from the Pagan Hooligans, which was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, very cool people. Very much enjoyed meeting them. Isaac and Jasmine are a hoot. They're so much fun. Jillian is precious in person. She just kills me. I adore her. Firelight is very tall in person.
So I've heard, and I saw the pictures, and I was like, holy shit, he's really tall.
He is a giant among men. Indeed. So, it was a lot of fun meeting them all. And Velma, of course, she's just adorable and brassy and fun. And
yes.
Lots of good times.
Yeah, seeing the pictures and seeing the pictures online made me really, really wish I had a chance to go. But, alas, I didn't. And I don't know how comfortable I would have been anyway.
Yeah, you're a bit shy in person sometimes, I think.
I am.
But that's
yeah,
okay.
They were on the new Inciting a Brouhaha, they were talking about who was the most surprising meeting in person, you know, versus the podcast personality. And I thought it was really interesting that they said you were, because they said you're all business on the podcast.
Oh, no.
I don't think you're all business, but...
What business are they in? I mean, I don't think... Maybe I'm just not funny. Maybe you're a crazy
maybe
person.
Maybe you're not funny, and I just laugh at really dumb things. That makes us good friends, though, because you tell dumb jokes, and I laugh at dumb things.
So we get along fine. The rest of y'all can suck it. I don't care. I ain't scared.
What is?
We entertain ourselves.
Yes, we do.
But it was really fun getting to meet them. It was really pleasant. Showed up there, got like hella swag.
Yeah.
Hella swag. Velma went all out on this.
I saw.
Like, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you. Like, there were just so many things. There were Coventry Creation candles, mm-hmm. Dorothy Morrison coffee. yeah, there's like witchcraft, or I think I got the hoodoo blend of coffee.
Cool.
So, Jillian had made some tea. Lane is now using the delicious lip balm that I have passed along to her. I also had to pass along something else that Velma gave us.
Yeah, tell the listeners about that.
We got these, first of all, there was these awesome big tote bags that Velma's mom handmade for us.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And hand embroidered. It was just a fantastic tote bag. But there were also these little bags inside that were like cloth bags, sort of like tarot card bags.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of us got something different as the front design for our bag. I got bunnies. And like, I pull it out and I'm like, haha, that's very funny, Velma. She's like, what? And I show it to her and she's like, oh, bunnies. I was like, yes, that will go to Lane now. She's like, oh, that's a good use for it.
Yeah. Awesome. So that could pass to me, and I'm very excited because we all know I love bunnies. So.
And we all know I'm terrified of them. So that worked out great. But it was exciting. It was a lot of fun to meet them all. We have a lot of crazy in-jokes now. I won't torture our poor audience with the Nog. not that anyone else has tortured audiences with the Nog, but like I'm afraid like if I make too many in-jokes, then people are going to be like, I don't really care anymore. So
me being one of them, jeez.
Yes, and I don't want to make Lane feel left out.
That's so. Right. Okay. Well, yeah, and you got to meet some listeners, too, correct?
Oh, my gosh. The listeners were fantastic. We had this one couple that drove all the way from Cincinnati to meet us.
That's amazing.
It blows my mind. And they were super sweet. They came up to lunch with us afterwards. Oh, they're just adorable, adorable people. People came up from Indiana, just from everywhere. And I found out later that one of our specific listeners...
Yeah.
Missed us by like 5 minutes.
That's awful.
And it just breaks my heart. Like I was just like, oh, I really wanted to meet her. Cause like she's you know, written to us a couple times mm-hmm. and she's super, super nice. And I'm like, oh, I really want to meet you. But unfortunately I think it started raining and we decided, okay, we'll leave like 10 minutes early and go and get lunch. Mistake.
Sad, sad day.
Mistake. Sad day. Yeah. But at any rate, to those who made it out, thank you so much. It was great to meet y'all. And to those who didn't, I'm sorry. And hopefully I'll get a chance to meet you sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right.
That's all I got to say about that.
So let's move on to ancestors and the underworld.
Yes. A creepy, disturbing topic for the night. It's not really disturbing.
Not really.
Not really even creepy.
Not how we're coming at it.
No. Yeah, so ancestors. I know a lot of witches, a lot of people who practice any form of paganism, really, like to incorporate ancestor reverence or ancestor worship into their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as New World precedents for that, I think that there are several cultural traditions here in the New World that clearly have ancestor ties, the most prevalent being, of course, Dia de los Muertos in the Hispanic community.
Yes.
So I think this is a great topic for tonight, and I thought we would talk a little bit about, you know, how do you work with ancestors? What are ancestors? Things like that.
Do you absolutely have to, being a witch, do you have to work with ancestors?
Yeah. All right, so where do we start?
Let's see, we have a few questions that we're sort of posing to ourselves. So the first one is, as a witch, do you need to work with ancestors? Is it integral to witchcraft?
I don't know. My take on it is that working with ancestors is integral to witchcraft, but the definition of ancestor can be pretty flexible.
Okay, that's kind of how I see it, because...
Yeah, if you're asking, is working with your own dead, departed, immediate bloodline family a central tenet of witchcraft? My answer is no, not really.
No. If it was, and I was to work with my family, I don't think I would get very much out of it, just because, you know, they were so...
Not you.
Yeah, well, so, you know, conservative Christian for a really long time. And honestly, we don't go very far back in my family. I don't really know much about, you know, anybody past my grandparents on one side, and on the other, I don't really have much to do with them because of personal reasons, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're just not, this is going to sound really callous, but like extended family is not really that important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so ancestor work, even less so.
Mm-hmm.
It just really doesn't do much for me, but
at the same
I mean
time.
Like family ancestors, like when I'm talking about just... you know, spirits of the past, kind of. That's how I work with ancestors, if mm-hmm. I do. But, like and, I said, I rarely do.
And also, how do you feel about sort of your cultural ancestry? Like, for example, I know that I have some Scottish blood in me. I know I have some Irish blood in me. And so there's an ancestral connection of a sort in that. And I don't really dwell on it. I don't make a big deal out of being, you know, I'm old Scottish and I'm gonna go toss a caber and eat a haggis in honor of my ancestors or anything like that. Right. But it is something I think about and it means something to me.
Not me.
Not you? Okay.
I have two very distinct countries that my families are from.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't really feel a connection to them.
Okay. Which is why you're really into the New World stuff.
Exactly.
Interesting. I think that's a really admirable stance to take on it, because you're sort of forging your own tradition.
Yeah.
You're sort of becoming an ancestor on your own.
Yeah, like some people, you know, they feel really close to like Celtic mythology and that type of working. And I've never felt that with any, you know, any country specific type mm-hmm. of, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, your ethnic heritage means yes. less to you than who you are now and what people do now.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And sort of where you are and its history.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfectly valid way to approach it.
Yeah.
So when you do work with ancestral forces of some kind, what are those for you?
They're really sort of vague.
Okay.
Like they're just spirits of mm-hmm. like-mindedness.
Okay. Well, I know. Okay. For example, in a working we've done together, mm-hmm. one of the things we did was we called in sort of historical witches.
Yes. I was just thinking about that actually.
Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Like you know, Isabel Gowdy or Tammy Blee or Biddy Early.
Kate Batts. Stuff like that.
Kate Batts. Yeah. The people, the ones whose names we know mm-hmm. from history who were associated with witchcraft. Is that sort of the ancestors that you approach?
Yeah, kind of, because they're going to be the ones that I feel a connection to, and they're going to be the ones that want to help me. You know, if I were to call on my great-grandfather, then no. First of all, I've never met this person.
Mm-hmm.
And
second, he'd be like, get you to church.
Yeah, exactly.
You need some hymn singing, girl.
So, yeah, anyway.
Well, that's interesting. And I think that brings up a really big point about ancestral practices for me, which is that a lot of people do approach it with this, you know, you're going back through your bloodline, and I do that. I do go through my bloodline as well as this other line, but I approach it as you have your line of blood and you have your line of spirit.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
And your line of, yeah, and your line of spirit is that the people who have influenced you.
Mm-hmm.
So teachers, I think, are a big, you know, you can have teachers who are ancestors in a way.
Yeah.
You can have these spiritual predecessors, people who have done what you've done that you've learned from in some way. So I think that those are just as valid ancestrally as your great, 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 great grandfather who you never met.
Right. But that's not to say, like, if you do work with that, or if you suspect there might have been like a little bit of witchcraft, even if you don't have proof and you work with them and it works for you, that's great. But, you know, we're sort of giving our personal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not saying like, this is the way to work and it's the only way to work.
Right.
I am saying I think that having some practice like this where you turn to, one, the spirits of the dead, because I think the spirits of the dead are somewhat central to witchcraft in a way,
mm-hmm.
and two, where you turn to sort of the elders.
Yeah.
As people who have gone before you and know what they're doing as well or better than you. I think those are what are important to be in touch with when you're doing witchcraft.
Have you ever worked with anyone really close to you, though? Like I think of your mother.
Mm-hmm. My weekly ancestral practice is to go to my altar and make offerings and say a prayer. And part of that prayer is to say all of the ancestors' names that I can remember.
Okay.
And that involves my mother and my father. My grandparents on both sides. We're a very short-lived family, by the way, so this podcast may not last as long as y'all are hoping.
Sad.
not that anything's anytime soon. We hope, you know, knock on wood. But at any rate, so I do go through my actual family in that way and just ask for their protection and blessing upon my current family.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm talking about when I'm saying, you know, thank you for the lessons that you've taught me as far as witchcraft, as far as magic go, that is incorporated into the other part of my ancestral prayers during the week, which are to these departed teachers.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I really use my bloodline ancestors mostly as a connection for maintaining my family, my home, my well-being, my general prosperity, because theoretically your family wants that for you, right?
Yeah.
They want you to be successful and happy.
Yeah.
So that's where I go with that. But then as far as the witchcraft goes, it's a completely different set of prayers to a completely different set of entities.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. I know something that like, I've always had a little bit of a, like, a quandary about, and I don't think about it too deeply or too much, but I'm always interested to ask the question. You know, I'm sort of very open to people's religious experiences being unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
So for a Christian who dies, and I'm just as willing to assume they are in heaven, whatever that is, if that's where they were supposed to go. You know, I don't think I'm going to heaven or to hell or to anything like that. That's not how I perceive it, but I think it's possible that they're, you know, in heaven. But then it makes me wonder if I'm, you know, when I'm doing ancestral stuff, I'm approaching them as though they're still in the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if there's sort of a dichotomy to that. Like, can they be in both places at once they're dead? Or, you know, is heaven in the underworld in a way? Is it, you know, and I don't think that, you know, I'm not saying like heaven absolutely exists or doesn't exist, but I always just sort of play with that in my head a little bit.
Huh. I don't know.
And if I'm calling to them and I have them come visit me, is it me and like, I'm taking you out of heaven for a few minutes and is it making them mad?
Well, I think it's even more of a quandary if you look at it from the reincarnation point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if they're living, where are you calling them from?
Mm-hmm.
Whether if they're, you know, their soul, their essence, whatever, their spirit.
Maybe that's what dreams are.
Ooh.
Maybe that's their spirit. When you're dreaming, that's your spirit going to visit some. There might be dreams where you're going to visit someone who's your descendant or something.
That's pretty cool.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's an original thought. That's part of our religion. You have to worship our religion to do that. No, I have no idea. That's just, but it is. It's fun. It raises those questions, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I always sort of, I kind of believe in like a limbo type of deal for a little while. Mm-hmm. Like, I think some people call it the Summerlands,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really believe that it lasts forever. I think you go to this place and it's, my view of it is it's like, it's of your own making. Like, mm-hmm. You know, in What Dreams May Come, you ever seen that movie?
Yep.
He goes and it's his wife's painting,
mm-hmm.
but like, you know, he sees his old dog and, mm-hmm. you know, his
old student and all
yeah,
that.
Stuff yeah. like that. That's kind of how I see it. You know, like it's kind of your personal heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to sort of go over your life and what you learned and what you take from it and, you know, come to terms with certain things depending on your life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you know, however long that takes you. You
could reincarnate from
yeah,
that point.
Yes, you reincarnate. But I still think like a little piece of that life, you in that life, stays
mm-hmm.
somewhere ethereal for you know others to call on.
I think that's absolutely the case. It's sort of like it's almost like there's this central self, this central soul or spirit.
Right.
That then sends out these sort of shadows or reflections into
yeah.
the world. And those are the manifestations
yeah.
that we have. Or the another way that I look at this, because I just look at it in a lot of different ways and I'm fine with all of them. another way that I really like to think about it is, for example, when a flower dies, all of its particles disintegrate, right, and become soil
uh-huh.
and can be brought back up into new flowers. But that's, you know, that daisy has now become seven different roses.
Right.
Right? So those little fragments exist in multiple places at multiple times.
Uh-huh.
So why couldn't a spirit sort of be in the same way? You know, there are little fragments that are left in the underworld, even if it goes on to reincarnate. And those are what you're calling. And that's why they're so... That's why they can be so difficult to manifest sometimes,
mm-hmm.
because there's just so little of that material that you really have to work with it to get it to really build and come into fruition.
Yeah.
But that's just a theory of mine. That's obviously, I don't have anything to back that up at all.
Yeah, Firelight was recently talking about, how did he phrase it? Something about like it being some Play-Doh
mm-hmm.
and how it's still Play-Doh, but you can turn it into, you know, a bird or a bowl or roll it up and it's a snake or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using that to explain, you know, like theory of gods and goddesses,
mm-hmm.
which I totally agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it can kind of be like a personal soul in that it, you know, it's still Play-Doh, but it just becomes different people in different lives.
Mm-hmm.
But you still kind of retain, part of the soul kind of retains...
Yeah.
The other lives, the Play-Doh-iness.
Sure. I'll go with that. Yeah, I think that's just as valid a way to look at it.
Yeah. And a silly way to look at it a little bit.
It is silly, but it's, you know, it makes some degree of sense. That kind of a metaphor really does help identify.
Yeah, it helps some people who don't believe that understand it as well, I think. Mm-hmm. I've also heard it described as a diamond, you know, the different facets are...
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Different, like either different faces of God in that,
right.
in that variation, or your soul is your diamond, but has many different faces
right.
throughout time. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard for me to be 100% sure of that.
Yeah. I think that's part of being human.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's just, that's why I'm so open to all of it. Is any of it, any of it seems possible to me. And all I know is that when I speak to the ancestors, there does seem to be a connection. And however I theorize it, it still works for me. I can still get in touch with those ancestors. I still feel like I have these guiding spiritual teachers in some way.
Right.
So as long as it works, I'm cool with it. Like, I don't care. So. All right. What's next? We talked a little bit about what our ancestors, mm-hmm. but do you have any more theories, any more ideas on that?
No, I think what we talked about with it being like a spirit line really mm-hmm. sums up how I feel about it. How about you?
I mean, more or less, as far as people go, I do, this might get us into a whole other topic, but I know that there are a lot of people whose family lines or tribes or clans or whatever have totems.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of these original animals or plants or things like that that represent that group. And I sort of wonder, like, if you can have an ancestral connection to something like that, too. Like, for example, the houses of York and Lancaster with the red and the white roses, okay. right? Well, if you know that you're somehow connected to one of those houses, you might use one of those symbols. And it's still sort of an ancestral practice.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Because you're tying into it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I just don't want to see that being done anymore.
Yeah, it's not... I don't think it's a terribly common practice, but... but I mean, it's still, you know, some people do still use those sort of symbols. I know in native cultures, it's still somewhat popular to be, you know, we're of this particular clan or tribe. And so therefore we have a sort of, for example, I was reading a story today that was about an Indian chief, who went out, on a canoe trip and encountered a bear, but the bear was the totem of his particular line. So he couldn't do anything to the bear. Like, there's this moral forbidden thing. Like, he could not hurt that bear. If he hurt the bear, it was like, it was a complete taboo.
Mm-hmm.
But the bear attacked him. So he had to decide, you know, what was the more important thing. And in the end, they killed each other. But it wound up leaving that the chief could not go on to whatever the next place in his afterlife would be. Because he had violated the strict moral code. And so he became sort of the, like a guardian angel or a guardian spirit over his tribe.
Hmm.
So it was very interesting to see that angle of it, which is not, it's still an ancestral thing, but.
Do you think families now could develop their own or maybe have their own just sort of hidden?
Like a totem?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I would say, like, if I had to pick one now, mine would definitely be dogs. I mean, we're such bleeding hearts for all animals, but,
right.
you know, dogs especially. You know, we rescue dogs all the time. And it's like dogs just know to come into our yard. Like, mm-hmm. we will help them, you know?
It's very possible. There's sort of like a spirit flag waving mm-hmm. over your home.
My mom has always said, you know, God sends me animals and, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And there was one time where she rescued this one dog and just got through dropping it off at the shelter, and she went to go buy groceries or something. She's putting the groceries in the car, and she turns around, and there's another dog just sitting there in the parking lot looking at her. And she called me, and she said, and I prayed, God, I can't have any more animals right now. So she firmly believes that too, mm-hmm. you know, from a Christian point of view, but I just think it's funny that, you know, like, We rescue these animals all the time, so they just keep coming.
Right, it's like they know.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely possible, and I think that makes an interesting ancestral connection. Then, because that, you know, whether or not it's a totem of your family
right.
line, it certainly sort of seems like that's your familial duty.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of, you know, it gets into questions of destiny and not destiny and things like that, but it is sort of this thing that's like, yes, Lane and her clan are assigned the duty of dealing with stray dogs. and it becomes an ancestral, an act of ancestral honor, I think.
Well, I mean, I don't know how I'm trying to phrase this. Like, the helping of animals makes me feel closer to my father. Because he loved animals and, you know, was always trying to help them. So, I can definitely see that. I mean, I think we're kind of getting into some weird, vague discussions here, but
Right. Anyway. And the animal thing, hopefully we'll discuss the animals in more detail in an animals episode,
yeah.
Which we sort of have planned at some point. But as far as, like, at the ancestral connection, like you said, taking care of these animals connects you to your father. And even though you're not necessarily considering that your witchy ancestral line, it does tie you back to someone you loved who's departed this this plane of existence in a spiritual way.
Right.
So I think that there's some value to that.
Yeah.
And that kind of gets us into the
Speaking of.
Yeah.
So what are some personal experiences we've had working with our ancestors? Do we mean blood ancestors or spirit ancestors? Do we talk about both?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, I have some very specific practices I do on a weekly basis.
And like I said, I rarely do it. So I only have a couple stories I can share, but so you start.
All right. Like I said, my weekly practice is to make an offering, and I'll just walk through my weekly practice really quickly if that's okay.
Yeah.
I go to the altar where I have all my ancestral representation set up. I have pictures of my ancestors and candles and a bell and things like that. And I ring the bell 3 times. Basically it's a way of knocking to get the spirit's attention. And that gets us into tapping the bone, but we'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to that in a second. So I get the spirit's attention with the bell, and then I start offering my prayers to my blood ancestors first, just because that's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, I can't say because that's who you're supposed to do that to. I have no idea. It's just what I do. And it works. And I'll pray, you know, to my mother and to my father, and then I'll pray to, pray blessings on his father and his mother and her father and her mother. And that's as far as I know, as far as the complete family line, but I do know my grandmother's lineage going back to Ireland, so I'll go through that whole train of people, too. And I'm trying to learn everybody, because I read this thing, this is going to sound silly, but I read this thing that was about, it said, to have a real spiritual connection with your ancestors, you should know their names going back 7 generations.
Hmm.
I was like, that's a really interesting project to work on. So I'm working on that, and I've gotten through my mother's maternal lineage. And that's as far back as I've gone, but I need to get through the rest of the lineage.
Yeah, I don't even know past grandparents on either side.
And honestly, until I started doing this, I had a vague notion of one previous ancestor beyond my grandparents' level, and that turned out to be, I think, a great uncle. Instead of where I thought he was.
I know
the
great uncle too.
I wonder if it's the same one. Are we related? So then I'll call their names and I'll say prayer to them, basically asking them to bless and protect the family, the house, all that kind of stuff, thanking them especially for what they've done so far and for all the blessings they've given. And then I'll move to the other side of the altar, and that's where I'm praying to the ancestors of spirit. And I'll name off all the ones I can think of: Biddy Early, Tammy Blee, Mother Shipton, Marie Laveau, Dr. John Nelson Raymeyer. I'm trying to think, you know, just tons. I go through as many of them as I can name off.
Mm-hmm.
And then I offer prayers of thanks to them and ask them to continue teaching me over the coming week. And I have candles that I light. And depending on whether or not I think it will annoy my wife, I'll light incense. I'll leave offerings of booze or cigarettes in some cases, because most of my family has smoked at one point or another, and you can't hurt them now. So that works out pretty well. And so I do all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically my ancestral practice on a regular basis. As far as it manifesting, I get dreams occasionally where I visit with my mother, mm-hmm. which is really nice.
Yeah.
I think you'll be talking a little bit about that in yours too. And then I've had one fairly spooky but very interesting experience. I think you've heard about this. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I was laying in bed, and it was early morning. It was before my wife had gotten up. It was still fairly dark outside, but like the first little bit of dawn had come in, because there's that sort of grayish light that you could see. And I was half dreaming and half awake. And I dreamed that I kind of looked over from where I was in the bed at the door to the bedroom. And I dreamt that it was just open. It was already open. And that there was just darkness out in the hallway outside of my bedroom.
But you sleep with your door closed, correct?
We sleep with our door closed.
Okay, to keep the cats out.
To keep the cats out. Not that we don't love our kitties, but they piss my wife off when they play with her hair in the middle of the night.
Yeah, you don't want kitty lopes on your head in the morning.
No. So anyway, so I was dreaming. The door was open. Didn't really register as weird to me, but I felt the need to kind of look into the hallway. And looking down this dark hallway, I got the impression that there was something in the darkness that I couldn't quite see. And just past the hallway in the darkness is our living room. And in our living room is where I keep my ancestral altar.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the impression that was kind of where this was all coming from, this feeling, this whatever it was in that area. And then I sort of felt like it was coming into the room, but I didn't see anything. And again, I'm still sort of half awake, half asleep. And I sort of let my eyes flicker. And all of a sudden I feel something just sort of rubbing my head, just very lightly, like brushing the hair back from my face. And because it's that dream state where I'm like, oh, that's okay. Like I knew it was like my mom.
Yeah.
Like brushing the hair back off of my head. And I was like, well, oh, that's very.
Didn't she used to do that when you were sick or something? Or did I make that up?
I think you made that up.
Okay, sorry.
But
I thought you told me that.
But it's a very precious memory. I appreciate it. I'm sure she did do that, but that
yeah, but it wasn't like a thing that she did a lot. Okay.
No, but it was definitely this feeling of like it was her brushing the hair back on my head. And that was when I realized, wait, this isn't, something's weird here.
Yeah.
And so I kind of opened my eyes completely, saw that the door was still shut to the bedroom. And, like, just realized that something had interacted with me. And I was reasonably sure it was my mother. But it was still very spooky.
Yeah.
But at the same time, kind of comforting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where occasionally I'll get this interaction with these ancestral entities. And I really, really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is a little creepy sometimes.
Yeah.
What about you? What are your ancestral connections, spirits, and experiences?
Well, one time I wasn't really intending to work with any ancestors. I was just doing sort of a meditative working. I was trying to cross the hedge, mm-hmm. kind of. And it was really easy for me to do this particular night. I had read about something to do, actually, in Jack Montgomery,
mm-hmm.
his book. Talk about what this one girl did to go into these trances. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to try it. So I put the book down and I did. And I don't want to say vision like it was, you know, in a movie or anything, but it kind of was. Like, it felt other. It didn't feel like it really came from me. Like, I was concocting it and then using my imagination. It really felt like it was from elsewhere. And I was exploring it, kind of. But anyway, so I'm in this very bright field, and then there's this very large hedge, and I know I need to cross it, you know, very literal. And so I hop over, and it's immediately night. There's a huge full moon, and there's a big, really tall cornfield on one side and like a fenced field on the other. And all of a sudden my dad walks out of the cornfield. And I was like, oh, hey, you know, I was kind of shocked. But I don't really remember.
I remember he gave you maybe not advice, but he sort of talked to you a little bit about what you were doing.
Yeah, it was sort of.
Wasn't it almost like a I'm here waiting?
Yes. Yeah, I'm having a hard time remembering exactly, which kind of frustrates me. But
yeah,
like it wasn't anything big. It wasn't like this huge revelation. He didn't. You know, he didn't tell me some great secret or anything. It was just, you know, I'm here. I love you and, you know, keep doing what you're doing kind of thing. And,
that's pretty reassuring.
Yeah. And then, so he went back into the cornfield and I hopped back over the hedge over into the daylight and then woke myself up kind of. And I was like, whoa, I need to tell Corey about that.
Mm-hmm. So, have you tried experimenting with that technique since then?
I haven't, actually.
I think it'd be fun to try that.
Yeah.
Mm, field report on that.
But after that, I did start, excuse me, I did start leaving some alcohol for him on a, and it's funny because I never thought of it as an altar, but I kind of made one for him without mm-hmm. even thinking about it. There's a picture of him and me when I was really little, and that I've always loved that picture, and a flower from his funeral that sits in our kitchen, and there's a teeny little cap from something that I have there that I put just a little bit of alcohol in occasionally, and you know, he always loved tequila and Jägermeister, so mm-hmm. sometimes I'll give him Jaeger, sometimes I'll give him Jack, sometimes I'll give him Jose Cuervo, and, mm-hmm. you know, and
all his best friends.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I think that's a fantastic ancestral practice.
Yeah, and I have had a lot of dreams with him. Which, and I've actually, I talked to my brother about this. You know, I asked him, have you had visits from him? And I said, and like in your dreams. And I feel like there's a difference between dreaming of someone and mm-hmm. actually them being in your dream. And mm-hmm. I've had both from him. You know, some, they're just weird and it's just my mind, you know, dreaming of my dad. But the first one I had after he died with him was a really big comfort. And I really actually looked forward to dreaming of him, obviously, because, you know, never going to see him again. So, mm-hmm. so anyway, in this dream, I'm fighting with all his, you know, my father's side of the family, his sisters and his mom and his dad and everything. And I don't know what it was about. I wasn't fighting with them at the time. I had no, you know, big issues with them or anything. It was just a lot of conflict, and they were yelling at me for something, and I felt really bad about something that I did. And I was at my grandmother's old house that we kind of grew up in, and that my dad grew up in as well. And he came out of one of the bedrooms, and I was like, oh, you're here. And, you know, we hugged, and he was like, you know, everything is going to be okay. And in all the dreams where I felt like it's been him visiting me, mm-hmm. I always remember kind of at the last minute, oh, this is wrong. Like, you're dead. Mm-hmm. And then I wake up. Like, I mm-hmm. never have a chance to say, oh, you know, here's where I'm going to tell you what I wanted to say, or here's what I'm going to say, you know, I love you, or here you say it back to me. It's like, it's different when I finally realize I'm dreaming, mm-hmm. you know.
It would be neat to be able to control that and realize you're in the dream and be calm enough that you don't
wake
up.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. I think it'll happen one of these days, but.
Yeah, it might just take time.
Yeah.
I know for me, when I have those dreams, a lot of times I'll visit with my mom for a good little bit of time, and it will occur to me that she's dead. Mm-hmm. And I'll say something about it, and this is the kooky conspiracy nut in me, possibly, but it's always, she'll always sort of answer like, no, I had to fake my death because of this and this and this and this, but I've been alive this whole time, and now you get me back, and it's fantastic. Yeah. It's this really, really, like, wonderful thing. Like, I don't even resent the fact that, like, she faked her death and let me believe it
right.
for like 10 years or right. whatever. But like, then I'll be like, oh, it's fantastic. And then at some point I'll wake up, and for about 5 to 10 minutes, it takes me, I have to readjust to it.
Yeah.
I have to adjust and think, oh, no, the dream was the lie. And in fact, she is really dead.
Yeah.
And it's like losing that person all over again
it
sometimes.
It is. It's a punch in the gut. It's awful.
Hard stuff to deal with.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, that's part of the experience of life. You know, you have to learn to live with loss. And I find one of the comforts of this particular spiritual path is the acceptance of communication with those spirits. Acceptance of communication with these departed loved ones.
Definitely.
You know, that's why I'm like, I'm comforted by ghostly visitations from my mother as opposed to, I'm going to go call a priest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very pleasant to think of them still being around.
Yeah. So anyway, let's move on.
All right. Let's talk a little bit. I mentioned tapping the bone.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Not dwell on this horrible sadness.
This is really sad.
Consuming us. We're laughing, but it's only to keep from crying. Tears of a clown. Tapping the bone. This is something I've learned from traditional witchcraft. Traditional witchcraft being sort of in the vein of Robert Cochran's type of witchcraft, mm-hmm. and a lot of others. It's sort of the non-Wiccan witchcraft that came out of Great Britain, but also has taken root over here, and it's this whole other thing. If you don't know about it, look it up. It's fantastic.
Yes, it is.
Really cool stuff. All right. Tapping the bone is a way to get in touch with ancestors. It's also a way to bring ancestors into your ritual working. And we've done this fairly recently, actually.
Yes, we did.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the experience of it.
I don't know. Do you want to tell them like what it is exactly?
Oh, well, that's a good place to start, isn't it?
You did that.
Okay. So you have this, for example, you would have a skull. It doesn't have to be a human skull. If it is, that's, you know, bonds are to you. I don't know how you got it, but good for you. But, you know, I use the one we used recently was a deer skull mm-hmm. that I found while wandering the woods near my home. Made some offerings to the ancestral spirits out there so that I could collect it. And so you have this deer skull, and you have two bones. You can also use sticks or whatever. What you want to do is you want to tap three times, just... And then you're going to breathe into the skull using this special breathing technique until you feel the skull sort of breathing back at you and sort of coming to life. And at that point, that skull becomes a gateway between the realm of the dead and the realm of the living. And you can speak to your ancestors and invite them to come into the circle with you or into the working space with you. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because it's this sort of animated quality that comes off of the skull. Yeah,
something happens. Because I had never done it before. Now, I've seen Corey do it. Like when we do, you know, tarot readings or something like that, sometimes he will, you know, tap the bone to help them kind of guide the cards. Kind of, but it's not as formal as this was. And with this, everybody in our group did it. And so Corey did it first, and then I was the next kind of in line in the circle mm-hmm. to do it. And
because you had seen it before, at least, so right. You kind of knew.
Yeah, because we were teaching this group how to do it, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I tap the bones three times, and then I do this breathing, and I have my eyes shut, and it's dusk, and it's you know, it's getting dark pretty fast, and so I breathe into this, and having never done the breathing before, I found it really effective. I mean, it was just three breaths, just very deep, and like you kind of use your whole body to take in the breath and your whole body to push it out. And on the third one, you know, I say, what was it exactly? Because I don't really work with, you know, my ancestors, I didn't feel comfortable calling them. So I just sort of said, you know, I just kind of called them like a spiritual protector, whoever that may be. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I kind of said, you know, take this opportunity to introduce yourself to me. And, so I opened my eyes and I was way closer to the skull than I thought I was. It was up on it was attached to a stang. And, yeah, it had changed. I mean, mm-hmm. and
it was like it was looking at you.
Yeah. It was strange. It was very, very strange. But, so anyway, so I get up and we finish our ritual and we're eating, but you know, it's kind of part of our ritual. You know, mm-hmm. it was almost like a grilling out cakes and ale kind of thing, yeah. Except it was dogs
and s'mores.
Yeah. So, but people kept getting this impression that there was a deer there. And we were at a park, but I mean, we were making a lot of noise, and I don't think it was an actual deer. I think it was, or I felt it was the spirit of this deer that we were using. Someone heard it in the brush, and I kept seeing out of the corner of my eye where this skull was. I kept seeing movement, and then I'd look and there was nothing there. And I kept thinking that the skull was part of the actual deer, like kind of over someone's shoulder, I would see it. And, you know, out of the corner of my eye, and then I'd be like, oh, that's not actually mm-hmm. a real deer. That's a skull of one. And I don't know. It was just, until we closed the circle, it was weird. I don't really know how to mm-hmm. else to describe it. I guess you kind of had to be there. I hope I don't sound like a kook talking about this, but
I think it would sound a little kooky if you were like, I think it was my Patronus. I think I made my Patronus come out of my
yes, that's what happened.
I know I said Expecto Patronum, but I didn't expect that one.
That reminds. Have you ever seen the Potter Puppet Pals? Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Wizard Swears. He's like Expecto Patronus. Voldemort's nipple.
And we have now devolved completely into nonsense.
Oh my god. Anyway, so that was my experience with Taffy the Bone. But you use other skulls, haven't you?
Yes, I have another. I have a ram's skull.
Right.
And, which I got because I used to raise sheep, so I expected it to be a little more in tune with me. I'll be perfectly honest and say, like, the ram's skull, while it's effective in sort of being a big stationary object that can serve as an ancestral touch point, mm-hmm. the deer skull has always worked better.
Yeah.
I think, one, because it was a found thing that I made a special offering for. Mm-hmm. Two, it's smaller, lighter, and more portable, so therefore it can go a lot more places.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to what I was talking about way back in magical tools. Found magical tools are always better than ones you buy.
Yep.
I don't know why it is. It just, it's like the universe is giving it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you, you know, buying it. But
yeah.
Anyway.
No, I agree. And that's, it's been definitely true of that. Not that the ram skull has been good in its way.
Mm-hmm.
Deer skull's definitely been better.
It's just been better.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it clearly worked better, not just for me, but for everyone there.
Yeah.
Which was impressive to me.
Yeah.
Because I think almost everybody kind of got into it.
Mm-hmm. Had an experience of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Even like Jack and Jack Montgomery was there, folks.
Hoo-hoo.
That was really cool.
Yes, it was.
I can't even begin to tell you how cool that was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah. Like, even they, who have had a lot of experience with this kind of stuff, they were like, that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was new.
Yeah.
So, I was happy with it.
Me too.
So, yeah.
So, anyway, moving on.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know, what else can we say about ancestors? I think that's...
Do you want to talk about the Dumb Supper?
Oh, yeah. Okay, if we're going to talk about the American side of this, we need to talk about the Dumb Supper.
Okay.
Okay. So, can you explain what a Dumb Supper is?
It is a supper, a dinner for the ancestors, but it's conducted completely in silence.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you set a plate, like an extra plate for... Yes.
For the ancestors, yes. Or someone else, which we'll get into in a second.
Okay. I don't really know what to say about it.
Yeah, I mean,
there's one version of it where it's a red meal, where everything is red.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into...
Right?
Yeah, I'll explain a little bit about that when we get to spelled out.
Like, is that different, or is that part of it, or, like, can you have a red...
You can have a red meal that has no Dumb Supper component.
Okay, that's what I was confused.
Yeah, a red meal is just it's a special offering to the ancestors where all the food is red or dark.
Okay.
Because it represents blood, but we'll get into that.
Okay.
Probably that's really about all I'll say about it.
So do you want to talk about that and spelled out, or right now?
Let's talk about the actual Dumb Supper right now.
Okay.
So the Dumb Supper, when you're doing that, it's, like she said, a meal held in complete silence. I mean, everything from the plating of the food, mm-hmm. to the eating of the food, everything,
serving,
clearing the dishes and everything happens in silence.
And Corey and I have done this, mm-hmm. and it was, this was 2 sounds ago,
mm-hmm.
and this was...
Intensely profound.
Yeah. I don't really know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
You should definitely try it if you have the opportunity, especially with someone else.
Yes.
Or a group of witches if you can.
Mm-hmm. Doing it by yourself would probably be interesting in its own way, because mm-hmm. you could have pictures of the people that you're wanting to welcome to the table, and sitting across from them, eating in complete silence and looking at that plate where they should be or are, will have an impact on you.
Yeah.
But doing it with a large group of people where everyone's sort of energy or expectancy of who's supposed to be in that missing place, it really impacts how that meal feels.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do feel, at some point, you really do feel like there's someone else there.
Yeah.
And it's powerful stuff to do that. I remember with the Wiccan coven that I studied with for a while, one of the things we did was a Dumb Supper there, and everyone was crying by the end of it. You know, it was very touching. Mm-hmm. Very touching stuff, because, I mean, it's so weird to be seeing people eating and crying at the same time, but it's very powerful. And it was good. It was a good thing to see.
Yeah.
I don't really know what else to say on that other than, okay, so getting into the folklore for just a second.
Okay.
You do have the dumb supper where you're trying to contact an ancestor. There's another type of dumb supper you can do on Halloween that's designed for young girls to figure out who their future husbands are going to be.
Hmm.
And they do the dumb supper, and at some point, a figure or a shape will appear in the chair or might come to the door.
Uh-huh.
And whoever that is their future husband. But there's a catch to it. Probably the best story I've ever read about it is that a group of girls did it, and this one girl was sort of the girl that was trying to find out her future husband. And so she set that particular place, and they saw the guy, and, oh, that's who I'm going to marry. Well, a couple years later, she saw that man out in the street and knew that it was him. And, like, so they hit it off really well, and they were getting married. And they, you know, they get to their wedding night and everything like that and have a really, you know, good time and everything. And they're sitting there afterwards. And she starts talking to him about how she knew she was going to marry him from the first time he saw her. Or she saw him. And he gets a little quiet.
Mm-hmm.
He just says, well, you know, I know it's silly, but, you know, my friends and I did this thing a few years ago when I was a teenager. And I saw you there. He stops. He looks at her with the coldest, deadest eyes and says, that night you dragged me through hell, and kills her.
Holy shit.
I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about it because, like, to call him there, they literally, like, sucked his spirit out of his body and dragged him through hell to get him there. And, like, and then when he got put back, he had sort of forgotten about it. But then she reminded him, and it was so enraging that he killed her for it.
Wow.
So when you're doing a dumb supper, be careful.
So don't call on living people?
Don't try this shit at home, as Isaac would say. Yeah, definitely don't call on living people for a dumb supper, please. Bad idea. All right.
Okay, so are you ready to move into our segments?
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do this crazy thing. What do you have for us in witchcraft? We're going to pause. I'm just asking what people can expect after the break.
You didn't say after the break. Okay,
After the break, Lane, what can people expect from witchcraft? Throat Lane. Shake angry fist, Lane says.
Little impotent fist of rage. All right, in witchcraft, we're going to be talking about pumpkin carving.
Cool.
Yay.
Cool.
Hello, my name is Scarlett, hostess of the podcast Lakefront Pagan Voice. Come for a walk with me along the shores of Lake Michigan. We can talk about spirituality, about paganism, witchcraft, and shamanism. We can talk about what's going on at the local farmer's market and share our favorite recipes. And we can get some fresh air and exercise while we're at it. So join me in iTunes or at Podbean for a stroll.
Standing Stone
and Garden Gate,
a podcast for
artistic and creative,
intelligent and philosophizing,
crafty and practical,
deep thinking,
hardworking
pagans
and witches.
Visit StonegatePodShow.net.
Or us.
Hello, this is Firelight, creator of Inciting a Riot, the podcast. Come join the riot as I tackle tough issues in paganism, news, and living a modern, magical, middle-class life. Find the show on iTunes or become a rioter by following the blog at fire-lyte.blogspot.com. Inciting a Riot. Lighting a fire under comfortable thinking.
Okay, so in this witchcraft, we are talking about carving pumpkins. It is one of my most favorite Halloween/Samhain crafts to do. And with this, I'm going to talk about how to use every single bit of the pumpkin, not let anything go to waste, because I think that's important. So first, what I do is, a lot of people say that there's a difference between carving pumpkins and eating pumpkins, and I have found absolutely no difference.
Mm.
So don't listen to that.
Honestly, like, I think I know what you're talking about, where people are like, certain pumpkins taste better to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the pumpkins they're talking about are butternut squash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I've seen recipes where they'll say you can use one or the other, and the butternut squash usually tastes better.
Yeah.
But the pumpkin always tastes the same to me, no matter what size or type it is.
Right. Yeah. Some people actually, like, you know, advertise, these are the carving pumpkins, these are the eating pumpkins. I guess, like, one is supposed to be sweeter or something. I'm not sure. I've never noticed a difference. I always buy carving pumpkins and eat them anyway. So
it's the man trying to get you to buy an extra pumpkin.
That's right. It's the man keeping me down.
Don't listen to the man. Buy one pumpkin. Actually, buy as many pumpkins as you want.
That's right. So anyway, I always buy a large enough pumpkin. And, you know, you do, pretty much everyone knows how to carve a pumpkin. You take the top off in a circular motion around the stem, set that aside, and then we just scoop out all the guts. And usually my husband will do this, and I'll get my hands dirty and take out all the seeds. And what we do is we put the seeds on a regular baking pan or like a cookie sheet, and he puts garlic salt over them. That's how he likes them. But you could do regular salt.
Red pepper is also good too.
Oh, okay.
Spicy.
Yeah, and some people do cinnamon or
Barbecue seasoning.
Yeah, any type of seasoning would work. Okay, so bake them.
Mm-hmm.
But not for too long, maybe.
It's like 15, 20 minutes.
15, 20 minutes is what I would say. I don't personally like pumpkin seeds, so this is more my husband's deal, mm-hmm. but he loves it. But so anyway, so you can bake the pumpkin seeds, or you could save some for planting, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've never done it, but. Then again, I do not have a green thumb at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so that's one way for the seeds to be used. And then the gunk is what I turn into the pumpkin pie. And usually you're going to need around 2 cups, which is what a medium to large size pumpkin will give you. And we just put it in the blender or a food processor, whatever you have. Or even like a handheld mixer would work. And you're going to want... For pumpkin pie, you put cream in it, condensed milk,
mm-hmm.
and you just keep mixing until it's smooth, pretty much. Maybe a little bit lumpy if you like that pumpkin type of texture.
That sort of rustic thing, yeah.
I love to get it as smooth as possible because it bakes a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a recipe that we're going to be linking for pumpkin bread. That sounds really good. I've not made it, but I think I will. But we do make pumpkin pie every year mm-hmm. from our carved pumpkin. And then, you know, set a candle in the pumpkin and set it out on the porch. And
mm-hmm.
I love it when trick-or-treaters come by and you have, like, an actual jack-o'-lantern out.
Yeah.
Because some people do that anymore, it seems like. And maybe it's just my neighborhood, but,
mm-hmm.
but I like it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then... I've got questions for you.
Okay.
Do you think that people need special equipment to carve pumpkins? Like, what about those pumpkin carving kits? Are those worth it?
I have never used one, but I don't have very much upper arm strength, or upper body strength, I mean, like, at all. You could totally take me in a fight, no matter who you are. Like, Stephen Hawking could take me in a fight.
Take that.
But,
sorry, Stephen Hawking.
So, like I said, I've never used one. We always just use our kitchen knives. And we don't have particularly nice kitchen knives either. And then I just use a spoon to, like a soup spoon to mm-hmm. scoop out all the extra stuff on the sides.
Mm-hmm. How thin do you get the walls of the pumpkin?
Not very. I actually don't like the fleshy part of the pumpkin for my pies.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to use the actual, like, the gunk inside that, you know, a lot of people mm-hmm. are kind of squeamish about.
And the jack-o'-lantern will last longer, I think, the thicker the walls are, right?
Yes. Yeah, I remember you had a problem last year with your pumpkins all shriveling and getting moldy.
Well, two years ago, I went to town. I got, like, 8 pumpkins, 9 mm-hmm. pumpkins, and I carved all of them. Had this really, like, awesome array of pumpkins on my porch, but I did it at the beginning of October, and I carved too thin on the walls. And by, like, a week till Halloween, they were all, like...
Yeah. They were kind of gross looking. It
was pretty awful. And I was really proud of them.
All the teeth were shriveled up. They looked like old men.
Yeah. And, like, they looked really cool, like, the first night they were out there. But then it was just sad.
Yeah. I will say, though, if you don't have enough gunk to make however many cups of pumpkin puree that you need, you can keep scraping the walls and keep blending that to give yourself mm-hmm. a little bit more volume of however much pumpkin mm-hmm. puree you need.
Yeah, or as we mentioned earlier, butternut squash. If you need to substitute, you can roast you up some butternut squash, scoop out the innards, and use that mm-hmm. just as easily.
Yeah, any type of winter squash is going to mm-hmm. work for you.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. Have you ever tried? This is something I discovered, I think maybe last year. If you take a little cinnamon or a little allspice or any pumpkin pie spice and sprinkle a little bit inside your jack-o'-lantern before you put your candle in there, it creates a really good, it creates a pumpkin pie smell.
That's neat.
While it's burning.
I never would have thought of that.
It's really cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. So people walk up and they're like, pumpkin pie. And you're like, here, have crappy candy. Yeah. I got pumpkin pie.
Hey, we always get good candy. Some of that nasty, like, caramel stuff.
You're talking about the little black and orange wrap stuff. I love that stuff.
I hate that stuff. It's so gross.
I love it so much. It's so delicious.
No, we go all out. We do, like, Kit Kats and Snickers and the good stuff. We do chocolate.
Whatever. Don't come to my house. It's all like those chalky mints that you get at weddings and the yellow or the orange and black wrapped candy.
Toothbrushes.
3-year-old Mary Janes.
Yeah, you give out pennies. Here you go, kids.
UNICEF donation boxes. Not that there's anything wrong with UNICEF, but it'd be funny to give them out to people as Halloween gifts.
Goodness. Okay, so that's it for pumpkin carving.
Okay. Yeah, so next we're going to have spelled out, and in that we'll be discussing a little bit of different ways to do ancestral offerings or prayers. All right, so in spelled out today, we would talk a little bit about some various ways of doing ancestral offerings, prayers, just general ancestor work. We talked a bit about tapping the bone in the main segment. Very fun, very cool. The red meal that we mentioned also is called a housel or hoozle. I think there are a couple of other ways to pronounce it too. So,
where does that name come from? Do you know?
I believe it's Teutonic.
Okay.
It's Germanic and possibly Norse. But it's known as the red meal because what you do is you offer to the ancestors red food. Which I know is really vague, but think apples, think pomegranates, think red wine. Also, dark bread is appropriate.
Like rye.
Yeah, rye is very good. Pumpernickel, things like that.
I love pumpernickel.
And so what you do that is you set a separate plate for them. And then you can sprinkle it with the wine or with, you know, if you've got, we did it with, something that was interesting, we used a pomegranate and we split it and we squeezed the pomegranate juice over it. And the idea is you're trying to make it look like blood. You're trying to offer them blood because there's this longstanding precedent in mythology of blood offerings to the dead to help raise them. If you think about, I think it's the Odyssey where Homer slaughters a ram and raises the ghost of Achilles in the underworld because the ghosts have to drink that blood to be able to live again. And it contains a vital essence. So in a sort of very Catholic way, you're turning these red symbols into blood, which the ancestors can then partake in and become a very vital part of your work. I found it to be pretty effective. You can make it incredibly complicated by adding all these layers of ceremony to it. Robin Artisan explains it really well in his Witching Way of the Hollow Hill. And he has some very complicated formula where he's like, I think it's like, I take this meal, I take it with my left hand I serve it. And he goes through these very repetitive incantations that go with it. And it's excellent. If that helps you get into the right mindset, certainly do that. I'm real simple-minded about stuff like this. As we've determined tonight, I think already, like, I don't think too deeply about something. So I'm just like, if it works, it works. Yeah. So,
well, we did the red meal as part of our dumb supper. Like, it was our supper. It was just, it was dumb and it was red.
Yes. We had a dumb red meal.
Do you remember what our different foods were? Because we had three courses.
Yes, we had. I know we had the bread. I know we had the pomegranate. I believe we had steak or some sort of a meat.
I don't think it was steak.
Was it not steak?
No,
it was,
I don't like steak, so.
Oh, then I don't know what it was.
I don't remember.
But yeah, we had multiple things. And then I know we had either it may have been like a blackberry wine or something. It was not it wasn't like a typical red wine, I don't think.
I don't remember.
I remember everything being very sweet, basically.
Yeah.
Which is fine, too. It's nice to have the sweet dead as well.
Yeah, well, what we did, we sort of, you know, held our meal. And every time we took the next serving we did. Like, we gave it also to this third plate that we had set up. And then at the end, we took it all together and kind of offered it outside. Whoever.
Yeah, and into the land.
Yeah.
Like, dig a little pit, dump it.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm glad you mentioned about the serving them as we were going. That was something else. It's something I've noticed between various groups. A lot of groups, when they do offerings to ancestors or spirits or whatever, they have the Cinnabon, you know, sized muffin, which is like your head, and they pinch off a piece about as big as your pinky and put it in the bowl and then eat the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the red meal works is they get the same portion you do, if not a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important when working, especially with ancestors of the dead, is you treat them as though they are fully corporeal beings at your table.
Okay.
So we gave them a full serving.
Yeah.
It was delicious. I think. It was very sweet.
It was very messy with the pomegranate.
It was, but it looked really cool on that plate.
It did.
Like, it really looked like it had been sprinkled with blood. Pretty cool stuff. And theoretically, and I may get in trouble for saying this, you could do this with an animal sacrifice. You could use blood in the working. Not advocating it.
I'm making eek face here, people.
She's making eek face.
I would not do this.
Don't try this shit at home.
I would not participate in something doing this.
But I am saying that there are traditions that do allow for that kind of work. And it would be the same principle. You're using blood to awaken.
What about your own blood? Like, what if you pricked your finger or something and used it?
I'm sure you could. There's the use of your own blood in magic can get kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Because you bind yourself by doing that. So, I don't know. I'd have to really think about it before I did it, because I wouldn't want to be bound into the underworld. Like, I wouldn't want to be signing a contract I hadn't read first, right. If that makes sense.
Right.
So you have to be very careful about what you're putting your blood to.
Mm. Good point.
So that's the red meal. Oh, for ancestor work, if you're not doing something like the red meal, if you're looking for a regular practice, I thought I would share a little sort of an ancestral prayer that I'm pulling this from Ray Marlborough's Magical Power of the Saints, which sounds very Catholic and is Catholic in a way. If you're a hoodoo, not really going to mass Catholic, it's great. And I just wanted to share a little bit of this. If you light your candle on your altar, you would say this or something similar. Blessings to all my departed ancestors. I pay my respects to my great-great-grandparents. If you know their names, you say their names. I pay my respects to my grandparents and say their names if you know them. Pay my respects to my great-grandparents and say their names. To my great-aunts, great-uncles, say their names. My aunts, my uncles, say their names. My deceased father or mother, if they're deceased, say their names. And then you offer a little cup of water and a candle and say, accept this cool water that you may have refreshment. Accept this light and energy so that you may have comfort and strength. Your presence is greatly missed here on earth. Forget not your posterity. May you continue to bring us guidance and wisdom, peace in our lives, health and prosperity for our homes. Don't necessarily need an explanation for that other than to say that water kind of serves the same purpose as blood. Water animates and vitalizes us.
Mm-hmm.
The flame also does the same thing. Flame is warmth. It's like the warm blood of your body. So by offering them those things, saying those prayers to them, you can really incorporate them into your practice and build a strong ancestral practice doing those kinds of things. So if you don't regularly work with ancestors but have been looking for a way to start, that's how I would start.
Cool.
Just a simple prayer, candle, and some water. So that's ancestors.
Awesome.
All right. Do we have any unfinished business?
I don't think so.
I should go ahead and just randomly say, fear the Nog. If you don't know what the Nog is, I'm sure it will get explained on one of the other podcasts. So I'm not going to explain it here. I'm going to leave mystery in the air. But fear the Nog. Fear the Nog indeed.
All right.
All right. So that was a waste of 13 seconds, 14 seconds of our lives. I do want to say again, thank you to everyone who came out to see us in Chicago. Thank you. Also, big thanks to Velma for organizing the whole thing. She did a great job with that. And gave us swag. Oh, it kills me. It was just so much swag. Also, I wanted to give one quick... This is going to be me sort of going off randomly on a side tangent really quickly. In Chicago, we did a big witchy store day.
Mm-hmm.
Where we started at Witchy Wearables in Midlothian, Illinois. If you haven't been there, check it out. It's actually a really cool store. It's tiny. But you go in there, and it's like witchy stuff everywhere. Totally cool. And I loved it. And then we went to Augustine's, which is a hoodoo landmark in Chicago. Now, I'm not going to tell you not to go there. I am going to tell you that I think it's overpriced and overrated.
Hmm.
We went there, and we were looking around, and people kept asking me, what is this thing? What is this thing? I was like, well, that's for this, and that's for this. And that was kind of fun. But, like, honestly, their candles were not bad. Their candles were okay priced. Their fixed ones, the ones that they had put oils and stuff in, were a little on the high end. And they were nice enough, but at the same time, it felt a little like I was being sold stuff as opposed to people finding out what I really needed.
Right.
So, anyway. That's fine. They don't know me, so...
Yeah.
They should. At any rate, I'm not going to say don't go there, because they did have some quality stuff. But I will say that the next store we went to, a place called Alchemy Works over on Bryn Mawr Drive, oh my gosh, that store was amazing. Holy crap. Like, it had everything. It blew me away. Like, everything that had... I found traditional witchcraft titles, which I've never seen in bookstores.
Yeah, that's rare, especially down here.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I know you were further
I was
up
there.
You're further up, but still. I'm just saying it's really hard to find.
Yeah, and I found a whole shelf full of them. That blew me away. And I looked through, they're sort of like the reserved case, and they like had original printings of a John Dee Enochian magic text.
Wow.
They had some of the texts that are like the, I don't think I've showed them to you before, but they have these texts by like Andrew Chumley and Daniel Schulke of the Cult of Sabbati that, you know, on the secondhand market run into the thousands of dollars. It's ridiculous stuff. And they had them in their case. I was like, oh my gosh. And then, like, their oil selection blew me away. Their candle selection was amazing. And I started talking to the guy behind the counter.
Mm-hmm.
That guy knows his shit.
Good.
He was awesome. Like, oh, man, I wish I could remember his name. I've got his card somewhere, so I'll try to link to their website when we do the show. But if you are anywhere near Chicago and you're looking for a really killer store, check out Alchemy Works over on Bryn Mawr.
The price is good.
Prices were great. They were cheaper than Augustine's. For example, high genres at Augustine's were $5 a root.
Okay.
At this Alchemy Works place, $2.50 a root. Half the price.
Wow.
Half the price. That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I looked at them. I fondled them. I played with them in my hand. And they are quality roots. They're totally, totally decent. Nothing weird about them. They're just half the price of Augustine's.
Mm.
Because they're not associated with a store that has a reputation.
Right.
But they should. Alchemy Works. Amazing. So.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So that's me rambling on about Chicago enough. And I guess we should wrap up the show, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. If you'd like to reach us, you can find us through our website, which is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. Or there's always email. compassandkey@gmail.com.
And we should be back in a couple weeks with another show. Hopefully we'll have some other little surprise episodes. Well, not surprises, but little treat episodes coming out around these two.
Yes.
Our
next episode we're really excited about, though.
Yes. What's our next episode?
We're going to be talking about ghosts and ghost stories, especially personal ones, which I love getting into. So.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yes.
Lane is pretty haunted.
I kind of am, actually.
Yeah. She can't get rid of them. So we'll talk about that. And that should be a good episode, too. Hope you're getting into the Halloween-y, witchy, Samhain, Hallows, whatever it is, spirit. And until next time, we want to thank you for listening and tell you
to be well.
Good night, everybody.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The
The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music.